What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Lloyd Gray was just 19 years old when he was convicted of rape. A split jury meant that two black jurors had found him not guilty, which today would mean a mistrial and perhaps a pathway to freedom, but a Jim Crow law that sent him to prison for life, and a law today threatens to keep him there. Joining me to discuss is Louisiana-based journalist Richard Webster, a senior reporter for Verity News, previously with ProPublica's local reporting network. His most recent article is an unconstitutional Jim Crow jury sent him to prison for life, and new law aims to keep him there. Good morning, Richard.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me. Richard, whenever I cover state violence in Louisiana, which, surprise, surprise, I end up doing a lot, I always want to give folks context. Because even as much as I talk about it, it's the level of unapologetic brutality of the racism in Louisiana continues to smack me in the face. So I was wondering if you can just set some context for us.
Sure. So there were only two states who ever allowed for split jury verdicts or non-unanimous juries. Now, everyone probably thinks that, yes, if you are being charged with a serious crime, it requires 12 jurors to vote that you are guilty in order to be sentenced to lengthy sentences like life. In 1898, Louisiana passed a law that allowed for split jury verdicts. And this was done in response to the 14th Amendment, because if, you know, one or two black jurors voted against the majority of the white jurors, that was something that the state at that time just sort of didn't want at all. That was seen as giving too much power to the black residents of Louisiana. So this law was passed specifically, and this was done during a constitutional convention, to uphold white supremacy. So they passed this law that allowed for split jury verdicts, 10-2 vote that could send someone to prison for life. Oregon was the only other state to allow for this. I think in the 30s, they passed a similar law, and they did it after this high-profile case in which a Jewish person was accused of murder and instead was convicted of manslaughter. And again, this was done, you know, for various reasons of racism, and that just, again, couldn't stand. So yes, Louisiana allowed for this up until 2018, when the voters of Louisiana outlawed these split jury verdicts.
Okay, let's pause there, because we're going to follow that, you know, and then the Supreme Court, Louisiana Supreme Court. But I want to add some humanity to this conversation. So let's talk about Lloyd Gray. Mm-hmm. Walk us through what happened to him.
So Lloyd Gray, in 1980, he was 19 years old, and he was accused of rape. He hung out at this bar in New Orleans called Club Hollywood. He did odd jobs for a lot of the workers who hung out at this bar. It was like a working class bar. And there was a woman that he knew there, Diane Knockham. And they were just sort of like, you know, kind of acquaintances. And he said that they got into an argument outside this bar over $15. He admitted, and he later regretted, he said that he was, you know, angry that she wouldn't give him the money back, and he hit her twice. She claims that he was upset that she rejected his advances, knocked her unconscious in front of the bar. She woke up in an abandoned home, and that's where he assaulted her. So then she picked him out of a lineup. He was arrested. There was a one-day trial, and he was convicted of aggravated rape, and the vote of the jury was 10-2. There were 10 white people who voted to convict, and there were these two black women who served on the jury. They thought that he was not guilty, and they voted to acquit. One of these women later gave a statement to his attorney saying that she knew, because she was a black person on this jury, that her voice would not matter. And this is sort of exactly what this law passed in 1898 was intended for, was to sort of make these people powerless so their voices wouldn't matter in the judicial system. And then because of that, he was sentenced to life without parole and sent to Angola prison, which at the time was the most violent prison in the country.
Oh, has that changed? There's no longer was a violent person in the country.
I think it is. By all accounts, it is not as horrific as it was in the 1980s or 70s. It is still obviously not great. But I think people I've talked to who have been in Angola said, while it's still terrible, it was a horror show back then.
I was tracking, and you probably are aware of this. This wasn't all that long ago. I was tracking these stories. I'm digressing a little bit. I do that sometimes. Louisiana was sending babies, children, to Angola. They were taking them out of juvenile hall and sending them to Angola, and it was so bad. And people warned. They said, this is a really bad idea. Kids are going to be brutalized. I said, it'll be fine. And then it was absolutely not fine, right? They were tortured. Yeah. They were put in solitary confinement. They didn't get any time to move around. They weren't fed. People got sick. It was horrible. So now they're back in another baby jail. But Angola is, you know, it's notoriously violent and horrid. And Lloyd Gray's, you add this other touch of humanity story. His mother works there. Yeah.
So, and this is the thing that's sort of remarkable. So Lloyd Gray, he said that he had a loving upbringing. I mean, he grew up in Tunica, which is this sort of like rural community, split his time between his parents and his grandparents. And he said, listen, I was loved. And my brothers and sisters, we had a great upbringing. So he loved his mother. I guess that's sort of like why I was saying that. So a couple years in 1978, before he was convicted and sent to Angola, his mother got a job as a guard at Angola. So he is sentenced to life, and all of a sudden he is imprisoned at the same place where his mother's a guard. And he said that during the first couple weeks, she was working in one of the watchtowers that looks down at the yard, and he would make sure to sit in a position where his mother could look down and see him, and he could look up and see his mother. And it was just sort of him looking up to her and saying, hey, Mom, I'm okay. And her looking down on him and saying, I see you, I love you. Really, really touching. But he said after a couple weeks, the prison officials got wind of this connection, transferred him out. Lloyd says he believes it's because they worry that should he have chosen to escape, which he wasn't going to, they didn't think his mother would shoot him, which, you know, she probably would not. And then, you know, while she was still employed at the prison, they could never visit in person. So during that entire time, she retired in 2012. It was all just phone calls. So he didn't have that connection with this woman who he loved more than anything.
And that was my baby. They would have had me. They had to worry about me shooting them. I can't fathom. And then I can't fathom like the financial, the emotional, the terror that she had to keep this job. Right, that she had to choose between seeing her son and eating. Okay, and now, Richard, be patient with me, because what I want you to do is stair-step me through the different rulings, right, that happened. So we call this split juries, Jim Crow juries, right, yep. Is the other term for them. So what happens in 2020?
So in 2018, the voters of Louisiana, there was a huge movement to get rid of these split jury verdicts. Because, you know, these the majority of people impacted by this were Black people. And when you were convicted by a split verdict jury, you more than likely were going to be going away for life. So this was, the impact of these was incredible and horrific for the people involved. So in 2018, the voters of Louisiana outlawed these. Now that just meant going forward that in Louisiana, they were no longer going to allow for non-unanimous juries. 2 years later in 2020, the U.S. Supreme Court took up this issue, and they found it to be unconstitutional. And they also found that these were based on just racist laws. So, and surprisingly, so Justice Neil Gorsuch, who was appointed by Trump, he wrote that these split jury verdicts, quote, could be traced to the rise of the Ku Klux Klan and efforts to dilute the influence of racial and ethnic and religious minorities. And in Louisiana specifically, he said the point was, quote, to ensure that African-American juror service would be meaningless. So basically this meant that, you know, across the country, even though only Louisiana and Oregon allowed for these, this was now ruled as unconstitutional. But what the court didn't do was make this retroactive. So this was just going forward. This did nothing for the people who were convicted by these split jury verdicts. It left that to the states. Now, Oregon, the Supreme Court there said this is retroactive, vacated every sentence of everyone convicted by a non-unanimous jury, after which the district attorneys in that state basically made a bunch of plea deals. They said, okay, we're not going to retry you because these are a lot of old cases. We're going to reduce your sentences and you can get out. You know, that's an oversimplification. Louisiana, however, in the great state of Louisiana, the Supreme Court decided that no, this was not retroactive. It was not going to do anything for these people and left it to the legislature. Now, as you probably know, here in Louisiana, the legislature can be extremely conservative, and they have stopped every attempt to deal with the people like Lloyd Gray who are in prison based on these unconstitutional non-unanimous juries. You know, there have been proposed bills just to say, hey, let's re-examine these cases. And it's been defeated every single time. The Louisiana District Attorneys Association is one of the leading opponents. And they basically say this is going to be too much effort. It'll bog down the courts, et cetera. Meanwhile, Oregon did this with little to no problem. And there's an estimated up to 1,100 people still in Louisiana prisons who are convicted by these non-unanimous juries.
Okay.
And that's pretty much where it stands now. This year in the legislature, a bill was proposed. Let's deal with these people. It was defeated last year, the same thing. So, and Jeff Landry, our governor, is adamantly against all of this, which I'm sure you wanted to mention. Yeah,
I did. I have here, you know, right, this progressive DA's office, progressive DA. I have to find a liberal, left-leaning, right? Because I was like, God, this is the most bastardized word, that an organizer, most bastardized word in the movement today. But there was an attempt, right, to find a pathway for Gray to get out with DA. The governor comes in and is like, nah.
And I'll try to make like really quick. So since the legislature did not want to deal with this en masse, basically what you were left with was district attorneys making deals, like plea deals, and saying, listen, we agree this was wrong. There might have been sort of issues with your case. We'll sort of give you a plea deal, just plead to a lesser charge and we'll let you out. So they offered that to Gray. He was convicted of aggravated rape, they'll say plead to forcible rape. 40 years, you've already served 41, you're gone. Jeff Landry gets in and he passes a law last year that gutted the ability of prosecutors to make those deals. So Gray he had the opportunity to likely get out, and Landry comes in. And that's, I don't want to say that is the last way that people can get out, but it really is one of the last ways. And so now there are just very narrow pathways for any of these people convicted by these juries to get out.
And my sort of pin to the end of these stories is, and now we're in Trump's America. So, right, the political conditions are very different than they were in 2018 and 2020. The pendulum has swung all the way to the right. You know, this is the last thing I'll say, and you can respond to it. It's not really a question. My family's from Monroe, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I go back sometimes. Mostly I've been back because I was supporting the family of Ronald Green, who was beaten to death by Louisiana State police. And it always feels like, you know, I land and it's like time has just stood still. Mm-hmm. It just is racially, you know, infrastructurally, I'm making up a word, but I'm a writer, I can do that. Like, just still, that nothing has really moved forward.
So I was actually in Monroe a couple weeks ago. I covered this case, Jimmy Duncan, who was on death row. He was accused of killing his girlfriend's 23-month-old child. And there were these two doctors involved from Mississippi. Very famously, they fabricated evidence and et cetera. And so his case was vacated. But the district attorney there, and he applied for bail, they're just still so adamant that they want him put on back on death row and executed when there's all this evidence and the courts vacated his sentence and said that he is factually innocent. But the district attorneys in Monroe are just still in that mindset where, no, he is going to go back to death row and we want him executed. It's
bananas. I think the town next to it, correct me, is called Fairfield, I think. And we stayed in the small town that was right next to Monroe. Mm-hmm. And there was a group of us, right? Melina Abdullah from Black Lives Matter in Los Angeles, security, people from Families United. Anyway, there's a group of us. We leave the hotel, and within minutes, we've got escorts in the front of us, escorts in the back of us. They follow us to the courthouse. It was like an episode out of In the Heat of the Night. They pack the courtroom. They block us on either side. They're taking cell phone video of us. I was like, wow.
So this was just like an effort to intimidate you?
Yeah. Yeah, because we were there to support, to demand accountability, right? In this brutal murder of this man, of Ronald Green. And I was just like, yeah, okay. It was so intense. And then I didn't even go see my family, right? Because I was afraid to lead police to them.
I was going to say, so the intent was to intimidate, and it sounds like it was effective in some way, right?
Some. I mean, you know, we can, you know, yeah. I mean, it was effective in keeping me away from people that have nothing to do with the work I do being harmed.
Yeah.
Richard, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.